Chapter 32, Christendom and the Crusades. First, the Western world, at its lowest ebb. Second, the feudal system. Third, the Frankish kingdom of the Merovingians. Fourth, the Christianization of the Western barbarians. Fifth, Charlemagne becomes Emperor of the West. Sixth, the personality of Charlemagne. Seventh, the French and the Germans become distinct. Eighth, the Normans, the Saracens, the Hungarians, and the Seljuk Turks. Ninth, how Constantinople appealed to Rome. Tenth, the Crusades. 11th, the Crusades, a test of Christianity. 12th, the Emperor Frederick II. 13th, defects and limitations of the papacy. 14th, a list of leading popes. First, let's turn again now from this intellectual renaissance in the cradle of the ancient civilizations to the affairs of the Western world. We've described the complete economic, social, and political breakup of the Roman imperial system in the West, the confusion and darkness that followed in the 6th and 7th centuries, and the struggles of such men as Cassiodorus to keep alight the flame of human learning amidst these windy confusions. For a time, it would be idle to write of states and rulers. Smaller or greater adventurers seized a castle or a countryside and ruled an uncertain area. The British Islands, for instance, were split up amidst a multitude of rulers. Numerous Celtic chiefs in Ireland and Scotland and Wales and Cornwall fought and prevailed over and succumbed to each other. The English invaders were also divided into a number of fluctuating kingdoms: Kent, Wessex, Essex, Sussex, Mercia, Northumbria, and East Anglia, which were constantly at war with one another. So it was over most of the Western world. Here a bishop would be the monarch, as Gregory the Great was in Rome. Here a town or a group of towns would be under the rule of the duke or prince of this or that. Amidst the vast ruins of the city of Rome, half-independent families of quasi-noble adventurers and their retainers maintained themselves. The Pope kept a sort of general predominance there, but he was sometimes more than balanced by a Duke of Rome. The great arena of the Colosseum had been made into a privately owned castle, and so too had the vast circular tomb of the Emperor Hadrian. And the adventurers who had possession of these strongholds and their partisans waylaid each other and fought and bickered in the ruinous streets of the once imperial city. The tomb of Hadrian was known after the days of Gregory the Great as the Castle of St. Angelo, the Castle of the Holy Angel, because when he was crossing the bridge over the Tiber on his way to St. Peter's to pray against the great pestilence which was devastating the city, he had had a vision of a great angel standing over the dark mass of the mausoleum and sheathing a sword, and he had known then that his prayers would be answered. This castle of St. Angelo played a very important part in Roman affairs during this age of disorder. Spain was in much the same state of political fragmentation as Italy, or France, or Britain, and in Spain the old feud of Carthaginian and Roman was still continued in the bitter hostility of their descendants and heirs, the Jew and the Christian. So that when the power of the Caliph had swept along the North African coast to the Straits of Gibraltar, it found in the Spanish Jews ready helpers in its invasion of Europe. A Muslim army of Arabs and of Berbers, the nomadic Hamitic people of the African desert and mountain hinterland, who had been converted to Islam, crossed and defeated the West Goths in a great battle in 711. In a few years, the whole country was in their possession. In 720, Islam had reached the Pyrenees and pushed round their eastern end into France, and for a time it seemed that the faith was likely to subjugate Gaul as easily as it had subjugated the Spanish peninsula. But presently it struck against something hard, a new kingdom of the Franks, which had been consolidating itself for some 2 centuries in the Rhineland and North France. Of this Frankish kingdom, the precursor of France and Germany, which formed the western bulwark of Europe against the faith of Mohammed, as the Byzantine Empire behind the Taurus Mountains formed the eastern, we shall now have much to tell. But first we must give some account of the new system of social groupings out of which it arose. Second, it's necessary that the reader should have a definite idea of the social condition of Western Europe in the 8th century. It wasn't a barbarism. Eastern Europe was still barbaric and savage. Things had progressed but little beyond the state of affairs described by Gibbon in his account of the mission of Priscus to Attila. But Western Europe was a shattered civilization, without law, without administration, with roads destroyed and education disorganized, but still with great numbers of people with civilized ideas and habits and traditions. It was a time of confusion, of brigandage, of crimes unpunished and universal insecurity. It's very interesting to trace how out of the universal melee the beginnings of a new order appeared. In a modern breakdown, there would probably be the formation of local vigilant societies, which would combine and restore a police administration and a roughly democratic rule. But in the broken-down Western Empire of the 6th, 7th, and 8th centuries, men's ideas turned rather to leaders than to committees, and the centers about which affairs crystallized were here barbaric chiefs, here a vigorous bishop or some surviving claimant to a Roman official position, here a long-recognized landowner or man of ancient family, and here again some vigorous usurper of power. No solitary man was safe. So men were forced to link themselves with others, preferably people stronger than themselves. The lonely man chose the most powerful and active person in his district and became his man. The free man, or the weak lordling of a petty territory, linked himself to some more powerful lord. The protection of that lord, or the danger of his hostility, became more considerable with every such accession. So, very rapidly, there went on a process of political crystallization in the confused and lawless sea into which the Western Empire had liquefied. These natural associations and alliances of protector and subordinates grew very rapidly into a system, the feudal system, traces of which are still to be found in the social structure of every European community west of Russia. This process speedily took on technical forms and laws of its own. In such a country as Gaul, it was already well in progress in the days of insecurity before the barbarian tribes broke into the empire as conquerors. The Franks, when they came into Gaul, brought with them an institution, which we've already noted in the case of the Macedonians, and which was probably of very wide distribution among the Nordic people, the gathering about the chief or war king of a body of young men of good family, the companions or comitatus, his counts or captains. It was natural in the case of invading peoples that the relations of a weak lord to a strong lord should take on the relations of a count to his king, and that a conquering chief should divide seized and confiscated estates among his companions. From the side of the decaying empire there came to feudalism the idea of the grouping for mutual protection of men and estates. From the Teutonic side came the notions of knightly association, devotion, and personal service.